Welcome back. You are listening to Follow Me Into the Dark, and I am, once again, your host, Michelle. Thank you for listening today. Today is a good one. Now, not necessarily what you would consider maybe dark, but it's not paranormal, it's not haunted, it's not a serial killer. Today I'm talking about Kurt Cobain, and the reason I am talking about him on this show is because of all the mystery and the conspiracy theories that surround his death. So let's go. Let's talk about Kurt Cobain. On April 8th, 1994, rock legend and frontman of the band Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, was found dead after an electrician who was supposed to install a security camera stumbled across his dead body in the greenhouse of Kurt's Seattle home. The cause of death? Self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. The musician had been missing for a few days prior to the discovery, and friends and family were worried about him. With a wife, daughter, and an estate worth more than $100 million, Kurt had everything going for him. So why did he kill himself? He was only 27 years old at the time, and like I mentioned, he left behind a wife and had a one-year-old daughter named Frances Bean. So the conspiracy theory that has been swirling around since his death is the question of whether it was truly suicide or was it homicide. Now, there are many reasons why people see either scenario as the cause of death. People question the crime scene, the means of death, and the motives of people around him. So to really have an understanding of the why and the how, we have to look at it all. People, I think, are quick to form opinions after hearing a few tidbits of info. But for this one, you really have to go back and get an understanding of his life and his situation at the time of his death. Then decide what you feel really happened. So let's try to learn a little about the man who changed the path of rock. He knocked the 80s glam metal out of the spotlight. This man gave us grunge and had a kind of poetic side of rock that we really hadn't heard, in my opinion, since Jim Morrison and the Doors. Doing all this while fighting his demons inside. So let's go back to his childhood. Kurt Donald Cobain was born in Aberdeen, Washington on February 20th, 1967. He was a hyperactive youngster. So what do you do with a hyperactive child? Well, he was given Ritalin. Given Ritalin to help him concentrate in school, and he was given sedatives to help him sleep at night. Here was a kid that would rather draw and be artistic, had a troubled home life on top of that, and he was given Ritalin as the solution. So he's starting a habit of drugs being used to assist him getting through the day, basically. He started a chemical dependency at an early age. Now, let me be clear, I am not shaming any of you parents out there that may have children on meds. When I used to be in childcare, I saw many cases of children on these types of meds. And yes, there were some children who had issues that needed extra help with medication. But I also saw a lot of impatient and busy parents that just didn't want to deal with a hyperactive child. And so they threw their kids on meds. And I also see that when these kids were put on meds, they do become very dependent on them in a sense that their behavior swings so far to the other side when they're off of them that they haven't learned how to cope on a day-to-day basis without that chemical help. And children with ADHD are actually shown to have 2 to 3 more times likely of a chance of substance abuse later on in life. I'm not saying Ritalin was the beginning of the end for him, but it was a factor in his childhood. Take that how you want to. Moving on. At the age of 9, his parents got divorced. He initially lived with his mother, She got custody of him, but he became quite a handful. She couldn't deal with him, so she sent him off to live with the dad. He becomes difficult to live with for both parents, and he's shifted off to relatives. Now, he becomes very rebellious. He acts out as a teenager. He starts experimenting with drugs and vandalizing. Cobain later said that the divorce had a profound effect on him. His mother noticed he changed dramatically after the divorce. Before the divorce, he was a happy kid. He listened to the Beatles and he drew pictures, happy pictures. After the divorce, he still drew pictures, but it was with captions of things like "Mom sucks" and "Dad sucks." When he was in junior high, his father forced him to join the wrestling team, even though he didn't want to. He hated sports. He hated school. He hated his hometown. He hated life. To defy his father over him forcing him to go into wrestling, during a match where his father was there in the audience, he didn't do anything but just let the other kid pin him. And high school was rough for him. A friend once said, Cobain stood out like a turd in a punch bowl. He started dyeing his hair crazy colors. He would spit on the jocks that beat him up. A lot of people thought he was gay because he hung around the girls and the gay crowd. And he didn't really get along with a lot of guys. Cobain wasn't gay, but he once said he wished he was just so he could piss off the homophobes. So, like I said, he was shuffled back and forth between parents, between relatives. He was hard to handle. He was acting out. He was smoking pot. And eventually he eventually dropped out of high school. But honestly, even if he stayed in school, he would have failed to graduate anyway. He struggled to find a job. Now, there's an article called Adverse Childhood Experiences: Why Kurt Cobain is Not the Only One. And it's by a Melanie Blow. And she says this, quote, "In a rush to explain a tragedy, everyone got the story wrong. Many people who dealt with Kurt got the story wrong, demonstrating our society's ignorance of childhood trauma and adult self-destruction. We still get the exact same parts wrong, which has a lot to do with why our national rate of suicide has barely changed in the last 20 years, and our national rate of IV drug use has increased in that time. As we retell Kurt's story, we're still getting it wrong. And we're not learning the lesson we need to," end quote. Now, if you've never heard of the term adverse childhood experiences, let me explain. Adverse childhood experiences, or ACE for short, these are the experiences in one's childhood that are traumatic or potentially tragic and happen before one turns 18. These experiences can interfere with a person's health and stability, even passing on down through future generations. Examples can be abuse, neglect, parents with mental issues, parents with substance abuse issues, domestic violence, incarceration, any kind of household dysfunction, basically. You get the idea. According to Charles Cross, who wrote the biography on Kurt Cobain, Heavier Than Heaven, Kurt had an ACE score of at least 4. Divorce, witness of domestic violence, psychological abuse, and at least one measure of neglect. The author also said that there's a lot of evidence that Kurt's score was actually higher than that. So with an ACE score of 4, someone's odds of using IV drugs are 3,900% higher than somebody with an ACE score of 0. And their odds of attempting suicide are 1,122% higher than someone with an ACE score of 0. Let those numbers sink in. Those were in the thousands. And as someone's ACE score increases, the odds of each of those outcomes increase as well. Now, Kurt was plagued with stomach pain from the age of 10 until he died. He was seen by many specialists around the world, spanning for many years, and no one was able to make a diagnosis. Now, a possible explanation of this physical symptom that had no obvious physical explanation or cause It could have been from childhood trauma or childhood stress. There were alleged sex offenders on both sides of Kurt's family tree. His great uncle on his father's side killed himself before he was to be arraigned for raping a child. And a cousin of Kurt's disclosed as an adult that he was raped by a maternal great uncle of Kurt's. Now, the author of that biography, Charles Cross, he says Kurt was drawing pornography by the age of 10. And the classmates who recount the story said he didn't recognize, or the classmate, this one classmate, recounts the story and said he didn't recognize what Kurt was drawing. Experts call this precocious sexual knowledge. Now, in the 70s, this term was a little more meaningful than it is today because there is more access to porn with the internet era today. But showing children pornography is a common part of the grooming strategy that sex offenders use to gain compliance and silence of their victims. Okay, let's go back to his timeline. After being kicked out of his mom's house and his dad's house, he bounced around crashing on friends' couches, in the back of vans. He couldn't hold a job. He even worked part-time as a janitor at his old high school. Cobain also claimed he tried to commit suicide as a teen by lying across the train tracks. Many people that knew him said that was most likely not true, but he claimed that he did that. Cobain did claim at one time he was sleeping under a bridge. He was very musically inclined from a young age, very gifted early on. Now, in 1985, Cobain formed a punk band, and it was named Fecal Matter. Now, he had an outlet to immerse himself in his songwriting. He had formed other bands, but Fecal Matter was the band that got things rolling and is what made his future Nirvana bandmate, Chris Novoselic, interested in working with Cobain. Nirvana has now been born. Their original drummer was Chad Channing, and then Chad was replaced by Dave Grohl, who we all know went on to form the band Foo Fighters, and he's still around. We see Dave around still. So this new sound, this mix of different styles all rolled into one, rock, punk, just a unique and edgy twist. It gave birth to that genre of music, grunge. And Cobain worked his ass off to be successful. He wanted to be big, wanted to be famous. Now in 1989, Cobain had a nervous breakdown when he was in Rome performing. This was during the promotion of Bleach, which was Nirvana's first album. There's an instance where he smashed his guitar, climbed up a stack of amps, and was going to jump. They talked him down, but he seemed very intent on breaking up the band. The band soon recorded Nevermind, their 1991 album, released by Geffen Records. The massive success of the single Smells Like Teen Spirit thrust Nirvana into the mainstream and immediately popularized the grunge subgenre of alternative rock among the masses. Kurt is being established as the biggest rock star of his generation. They are top of the charts all over the world. Kurt spoke to a lost generation. He came across as broken and he was relatable. Now, the first time he met his future wife, Courtney Love, was at a nightclub in Oregon in 1990. Courtney was there because she had some ties to the opening act, and Nirvana was booked there to play that night. They actually ended up flirtatiously wrestling around, is what it was described as. Cobain said it was lust at first sight. They met again in 1991 and discovered they had a mutual love for chugging cough syrup. They got married in Hawaii in February 1992, and a few months later, their daughter was born, Frances Bean. There is a lot of opinions about their relationship. Cobain says their relationship was a union of opposites, like Evian water and battery acid. Some describe it as fly meets spider, meaning Courtney Love was the spider. But by those who knew Cobain, they said he was not one who was easily pushed around He had a very strong will. And Courtney was said to be controlling. It was said that she was the reason that he got strung out on heroin. She's the one that got him started on heroin. And she came out and admitted that she was doing heroin while she was pregnant with their daughter. And because of that, their daughter was taken away for a while. Now, Cobain says that he used heroin because it helped him with his undiagnosed painful stomach condition. His stomach problems were described by him as a burning, nauseous stomach, so severe it affected his life in a major way. The stomach pain started in youth when his parents divorced. It may have been partly to emotional turmoil that can actually worsen physical pain. He couldn't function normal due to it. He did have 3 endoscopic procedures trying to determine what the stomach issues were. They still couldn't find an explanation for his stomach pains after multiple endoscopies. So he kind of self-diagnosed at some point and just said that it was from anger and screaming. It was all psychosomatic. He said his mom also had issues with stomach pains, but she eventually grew out of them and just got better. Now, he also had scoliosis, which could be a possible contributor because it can pinch abdominal nerves and cause pain. But who knows if that's what it really was. It still was pretty much an undiagnosed stomach issue. They did make that connection with the scoliosis in 93, and I guess there was a medication that could have helped, but he said heroin helped his stomach. So was that just an excuse to use heroin? He said he tried everything. He changed his diet. He quit smoking for a while. He tried exercise, but nothing would help except heroin. Now, he didn't really voice his heroin use all loud and proud. He didn't want his daughter to follow into that, and he didn't want his fans to either. Now, an old friend also said that there was nothing wrong with his stomach, and he invented an ailment for sympathy and an excuse to use. I'm not sure about that, because it seems on all accounts that it really was a true issue, the stomach problem. Everything that I was looking into. So I don't know if maybe this person wasn't a good friend, didn't really know. Cobain did make a journal entry stating something about his heroin use once. He said, quote, "It was a stupid thing to do, and I'll never do it again. I feel really sorry for anyone who thinks they can use heroin as a medicine, because, duh, it doesn't work," end quote. There's several times Kurt voiced things about not wanting to be a bad influence on people and his fans. There was an instance where a couple of fans raped a girl and allegedly sang the Cobain song Polly. Now, that song is a little controversial. He wrote that song about a victim of rape, a 14-year-old girl that was kidnapped and tortured and raped, and she did get away. But again, that was a controversial song. But he wanted it to focus on society's need to educate men rather than teach women to defend themselves. He didn't want it to be the other way around. In a 1991 interview, Cobain referred to rape as one of the most terrible crimes on earth, and it happens every few minutes. The problem with groups who deal with rape is that they try to educate women about how to defend themselves. What really needs to be done is teaching men not to rape. Go to the source and start there. End quote. He was a big supporter of women's rights and did benefit concerts for rape victims. He once made the statement, "At this point, I have a request for our fans. If any of you in any way hate homosexuals, people of different color, or women, please do us this one favor. Leave us the fuck alone. Don't come to our shows and don't buy our records." You can find this clip on YouTube. He stopped a sexual assault at a concert that he was doing once. He stopped mid-song when he saw some guy getting handsy and groping some girl in the audience. He like threw his guitar down and alerted the security guard right away, then went back to the microphone and ridiculed the guy. So, okay, moving on with the timeline leading up to his death. In 1993, a disagreement with Courtney Love over guns led to Cobain getting arrested. Allegedly, Cobain pushed Love to the ground and choked her during a fight over guns that he recently bought. She didn't want guns in the house. People close to Cobain watched as he spiraled down deeper and deeper into depression and drug use. When his daughter was taken by child services due to the drug use, he got her back, but he started using heroin again within weeks. Over the next several months, there was multiple cases of domestic disputes, overdoses, and suicide threats. The weeks leading up to his death was only getting worse. March 3rd, 1994, he attempted suicide while in Rome. And whether this was actually an attempted suicide, no one knows for sure. Neither Kurt nor the doctor that treated him say that it was an attempted suicide. Only Courtney said this, and this, she didn't say this until after Cobain's death. So there was a break in the tour. Apparently Kurt had come down with bronchitis and decided to check into a 5-star hotel, and Courtney met him there. At this time, there's rumors of divorce. Their marriage is suffering. So they give the baby to the nanny, and he sent someone out to get a prescription for Courtney, and it was for a tranquilizer, Rohypnol to be exact, which is also known as the date rape drug, but it can also be used for heroin withdrawal. They ordered some bottles of champagne. So they're drinking, even though this is kind of out of the norm for him. According to the people around him, he's not a big drinker, especially champagne. That's not really his drink. Now, sometime after 6 a.m., Courtney wakes up and sees that he was not laying next to her. So she found him unconscious. She couldn't get him to wake up, so she calls for an ambulance. They couldn't revive him on the scene, and he's transported to the hospital. They say that later on there was a suicide note that was found. So the question that circles this event is, did Courtney drug him? They were her pills. The doctor that treated him said it did not come across as a suicide attempt. But if this was an attempt by Courtney to kill him, why would she call 911? Why would she call? Actually, I don't know if it's 911 because they're in Rome. What would it be over there? I don't know. Anyways, why would she call for an ambulance? Let's just say that. If she's trying to kill him, why would she call for help? So maybe he just overdid it with the pills and alcohol and he overdosed? Like unintentionally? Possibly that's the explanation for that? So he returns home to Seattle, where his heroin use continues. He's using about $400 worth of heroin a day. That is about $700 in today's heroin's pricing, just FYI. At this time, he had locked himself in a room with a revolver and said he was going to squeeze the trigger. The police took the gun from the home, but 2 weeks later, he talked a friend into helping him get a gun, stating it was for security, for the stalkers. He needed one for safety. Those close to him tried everything to turn things around. His band members, his wife, mom, manager, and others worried about him, and they staged an intervention. Ex-manager Danny Goldberg sent him to doctors and therapists. He actually walked into his intervention just after he shot up heroin. And he pretty much just tells them they're all hypocrites because they use drugs too. So it did no good. He didn't see the reason to stop because he didn't see it as recreational. He saw his heroin use for medical use. He didn't think of himself as an addict, which is a typical addict excuse, honestly. It might have helped his pain, but it was still heroin. So there was a glimmer of hope when he checked himself into a rehab facility in L.A. on April 1st, 1994. Now, this was just a few days before his death, and he actually ran away from the Exodus Recovery Center in Marina Del Rey, California, after jumping a 6-foot wall. And so he took off. He used his credit card to book a flight back to Seattle. I say this because it's also noticed that he bought flowers with that credit card the same day that he was found dead. But it was found at the autopsy, it was discovered that he was actually dead for a couple of days prior to being found. So this is just a piece of info that just doesn't seem to fit or make sense. I think the one logical reason that I can think of is the fact that back then credit cards worked differently than they do now. It's not like a quick swipe and it shows the actual like day and time that it was exactly used. Rather, you know, you use it and it can actually take like days for it to go through and be recorded. So I feel like that's probably what happened. He was also seen around with a mystery woman the days leading up to his death. Possibly his dealer. Courtney was also suspicious that he was cheating on her. But when he came back to Seattle, he returned home. Courtney and Francis Bean were still in L.A. And he showed up in the nanny's room at 6 a.m. The nanny was a former roadie of Hole's. Of Hole's? That doesn't sound right. Former roadie with Hole. Let's say it like that. The band Hole. His name was Michael DeWitt. And they called him Cali for short. Some say he was hired as the nanny because he also was a heroin user. And he wouldn't tell anyone about their drug use if he was also using. Maybe. I don't know. That kind of makes sense. So, Kurt was home on Saturday, April 2nd, 6 days before he was found dead. Went to Callie's room around 6 a.m. Callie tried calling Courtney, but she wasn't taking any calls. Now, like I mentioned before, over the next few days, there were some sightings of Kurt out and about. On Tuesday afternoon, a friend, Eric Erlinson, went to the house to look for Kurt per Courtney's request. So Eric and Callie searched, but didn't look in the greenhouse. Originally, they said they didn't feel they need to because it was just a dirty little room that was of no importance, like nobody goes there. But later in the questioning, Callie said he didn't know about the greenhouse. I don't know if that should be considered significant or not, or maybe, I mean, he was a heroin user. Maybe his story just isn't reliable. Who knows if he knew about the greenhouse or what. So in response, Courtney Love hires Tom Grant, who is a former detective with the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, and he became a private investigator. So she hires him to go looking for Cobain. She tells the detective that Kurt fled rehab and could be suicidal. It was initially reported that Cobain's mother, Wendy O'Connor, had filed a missing persons report stating that Nirvana frontman had a shotgun and may be suicidal. But according to Grant, it was actually Love who filed the missing persons report in O'Connor's name. It's unclear why Love would have wanted to pose as O'Connor, but Grant used this information as part of his overall summary of events, hinting that Love was being elusive about her husband early on in the investigation. Another interesting piece of information, take this how you want, is that Cobain's lawyer states that Cobain removed Courtney from his will just weeks before his death. So their marriage was shit. Some could see that as a motive. But maybe he just changed it because he knew he was going to die soon. Like if he had already made that decision to kill himself. But interestingly enough, he died before the will was signed. So that change to exclude her didn't actually happen because he didn't sign the final copy. Also, Courtney insisted on a prenup. She was the one who wanted a prenup when they got married because she thought she was going to be more successful than him. So if they were going to get a divorce, like what the rumors were saying there at the end, she wouldn't even get half. She wouldn't get his money. But with him dead, she would get everything. He is definitely more, he's worth more to her dead than if they would have just gotten a divorce. Now, also, whether it has bearing on the case or not, Courtney was taken to the hospital for possible overdose and booked on drug charges the day before he was found dead. So let's break down the findings at the scene. Let's talk about the scene because it has been controversy for years as to whether or not this was actually a suicide. Fans urged the case to be re-examined. And they did re-examine it in 2014. And at that time, you remember, they released all those photos to the public. And then again in 2016, they released the picture of the shotgun. Now, after the examination, they did determine and confirm it was a suicide. There was accusations of the shotgun being melted down to hide evidence. So that's why they released that picture back in 2016 of the shotgun. Okay, so Kurt Cobain was found dead due to alleged shotgun blast to the head in his Lake Washington home on April 8, 1994. The body was found in the greenhouse, which was located above the garage. The paramedic said he didn't even know whose house it was. It was apparent he was dead, sitting with the shotgun between his legs and on his chest, activating the trigger with his thumb, possibly. The barrel of the 20-gauge Remington shotgun had been placed in his mouth. The wound in his mouth with the exit wound in the back of the head. The gunshot would have killed him instantly. What was at the scene upon arrival? Upon investigating the death of Kurt Cobain, authorities found several items. Beside the musician's body was a cigar box with drugs and paraphernalia. On his wrist was the medical bracelet from the rehab center he left days prior. Cobain left a page-long handwritten note that touched on his feelings towards performing. Quote, "It simply isn't fair to you or me. The worst crime I can think of would be to rip people off by faking it and pretending as if I'm having 100% fun," he wrote. The end of the letter was addressed to his wife and read, "Please keep going, Courtney. For Frances, for her life, which will be so much happier without me." Okay, let's keep talking about all these findings. Cobain's autopsy revealed that he had died a couple of days before his body was found, and the official date of death was April 5th, 1994. The toxicology report stated that Cobain had a high concentration of heroin in his system at the time of his death, and measured 1.52 milligrams per liter. The autopsy report also noted old needle tracks on Cobain's arm, as well as new puncture wounds. The official cause of death was listed as self-inflicted contact perforating shotgun wound to the head. Seattle police report indicated that Kurt Cobain was found with a shotgun upside down with his left hand around the barrel. The shotgun shell was found to Cobain's left side, opposite of where one would expect to find a shell. But of course, Seattle PD had an explanation for this as well. They claimed that the gun was fired right side up, but then flipped, sending the shell in the other direction. Now, people who have fired a shotgun know that the shell goes flying. So some say the only explanation for where this casing was, is that there was someone or some kind of disruption to Cobain's right, causing the shotgun shell to ricochet and land on his left side. So, the shotgun shell positioned on the floor, is that enough to make you scratch your head? The shotgun, I think, is probably the most interesting when we're talking about foul play. The lack of fingerprints seems to be mentioned over and over again. The crime scene photos released with the position of the bag with the shotgun shells, the box with the shells replaced in the bag. I think the explanation for that may be the gun was already loaded, possibly right after he got it even. He probably didn't just load it. Most cases, guns are already loaded and ready to go, right? And who's to say he injected heroin before he loaded the gun and put the box back in the bag? People saying he wouldn't have replaced the box with the lid closed when his intention was suicide. I say, how do you know that? How do you know what was going through his head? He might have done that. Now, people keep saying that there was no fingerprints. There wasn't no fingerprints. There are different types of prints. There's latent prints that are made of sweat and oils that you don't really see. There's the other kind of prints that are like obvious. They're like in blood or dirt. You see those with the naked eye. There was no obvious prints on the gun. No print in blood, for example. They just had the kind of prints that they had to be lifted. And those are hard to get good ones, especially if the gun has been there for several days. They took 4 poor quality prints that couldn't be identified. That's the actual findings. The gun was laying there for 3 days in a damp environment, which can compromise fingerprints. So the argument that there was no fingerprints is actually not valid. People keep saying that over and over and over again. Look into it. There were fingerprints that were poor quality and could not be identified. So, let's go on to talk about that heroin in his bloodstream. The Seattle PD claims he still had time to roll back down his sleeve, put away the heroin kit, pick up and position the shotgun and pull the trigger. No one can argue that he shot himself before he was incapacitated from heroin. But the question that comes to some is, why shoot up a bunch of drugs if you're just intending to kill yourself anyway? I think, maybe in his mind, first of all, that was his addiction. That was his coping mechanism. Remember that. What he used to get through the day. And he was just about to do something very traumatic, very final. And I say, why wouldn't he shoot up? Seems exactly like something someone who depends on drugs to go through things would do. So that's a stupid thing to ask. Not to call you stupid if you question that, sorry. But I think that's stupid. Oh, why would he shoot up with a bunch of heroin and then shoot himself? Because that's what he did. He used heroin all the time. It's what he did. But at the core lies the belief that Cobain couldn't have injected himself with such a large amount of heroin, 3 times the legal dose, and be able to shoot himself. The toxicology report from the autopsy shows a morphine level of 1.52 milligrams per liter, which is 3 times the amount that is considered to be lethal. In the body, heroin breaks down into morphine, and this is a very high level. The argument by some being that because the level was so high, he would not have had time to shoot himself before passing out. So this is why many people think it must have been a homicide. Among people who believe that this was a homicide is Kurt's grandfather, Leland, and even Courtney's estranged father, Hank Harrison. Hank even thinks Courtney had something to do with it. I find it funny that in his interview, he's talking about the type of heroin in the box found at the scene, Mexican tar heroin, and goes on to say that all the junkies he knows says you can't inject that much of that and be able to shoot yourself. I don't know. That's just funny. Reliable, funny. They say that someone took their time, gave him tranquilizers, because that was found in the autopsy report as well, some kind of tranquilizer, or Valium, actually, to incapacitate him. And then they shot him up with a large amount of heroin. Then they placed the shotgun in a way that would appear like he killed himself. The most alarming part of this is the heroin level. Extreme for anyone, but even 3 times for even the most severe junkie. But even though there was a high level, there could be an explanation for it, as well as an explanation for the other things that people call out about being foul play. There is a logical reason for the toxicology analysis. After a shotgun wound like this, so gruesome, so bloody, there's a lot of blood loss, right? We can all agree on that. That means that the medical examiner may only be able to get a blood sample from the heart. Now, since he shot himself soon after injecting heroin, it didn't have a chance to distribute through his body. The veins go directly into the heart, so the heroin is concentrated there. So the reading is actually higher than normal, a high reading, higher than the actual amount. So not accurate is basically what that means. Also, the fact that there was old needle marks and fresh ones in his arm means that there was heroin use going on possibly over the last several days, and that can still be in his system. Also realize that anything taken intravenously, it takes 1 minute to start working and several minutes to get a peak effect. So with that information, I feel like he completely had time to pick up a shotgun. The most relevant piece of evidence towards the ruling of suicide would have to be the note. The note started in different handwriting. The first few lines were talking about fans and I'm sorry, and then the last few lines were speaking to Courtney and Francis. Okay, so the note is confusing, but there's a few possible reasons. So the last lines were different than the first lines. Different in how they looked is what I mean. And he could have possibly written it with his other hand, switched to his left hand or his right hand. He could have started a sincere message to Courtney, then changed his mind halfway through. Or the theory is somebody else finished it for him. Most likely, the last few lines were written while under the influence of drugs. And handwriting experts actually conclude that it was his handwriting. Now, Kurt's wallet was also found by the medical examiners and repositioned for a picture of his driver's license. People see this picture and think it's fishy, but the wallet wasn't left like that. It wasn't in that position. They, of course, looked in the wallet for his ID to identify the body, because that's what they do when they get there. So that clears that up. There's also talk about this unreliable detective. So in addition to the evidence found at the crime scene, Norman Stamper, Seattle PD chief of police, says Detective Cameron, Sergeant Donald Cameron, lead detective on the Cobain case, resigned when he had learned that I was planning to fire him. He had concluded with one of his own detectives to replant evidence that had been stolen by a homicide detective at a homicide scene. There was no conviction for this case because it was almost instantly ruled as a suicide by the police. Although many questions can be raised about this case on how the police processed and investigated it. So why do some think it is Courtney who's responsible for his death? The motive. Nearly everyone in Kurt and Courtney's circle knew that Kurt was very unhappy with their marriage and intended to divorce her. If he did that, she stood to inherit half of his possessions at best. Like I said, with him dead, she got everything, including the rights to his music, name, image, which kept her very well taken care of for decades. Kurt Cobain had recently become the highest-grossing dead musician in history, surpassing Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson, John Lennon, and Courtney Love had benefited extraordinarily from this. Like I said earlier, there was a prenup, but he's the one that ended up making all the money. So if they got a divorce, half, maybe, is all she would have gotten. The alibi. Rosemary Carroll, Courtney Love's own attorney and godmother to her and Kurt's daughter, Frances Bean, believes that Courtney was involved in a conspiracy to murder Kurt. Courtney had accidentally left her handbag at Carroll's house, and after Kurt's death, she decided to look inside. She found two pieces of paper. One was a note Courtney wrote to herself that read, "Get arrested." In the days prior to Kurt's death, she was indeed arrested for possession of narcotics. However, she allegedly designed it as such that she only had narcotic paraphernalia and no actual drugs. So she was released from jail in a couple days later. This was supposedly her alibi. However, Kurt's body had not been discovered, at which point she hired a private investigator, Tom Grant, to locate him, then called an electric company to install an alarm system on the greenhouse, the room in which Kurt died, as soon as possible. The electrician who got the job was the one who discovered Kurt's body. Many believe this was her new alibi that she manufactured. The questionable suicide note. The second, more disturbing note in Courtney's handbag was a handwriting practice sheet. Kurt Cobain's suicide note had been analyzed by handwriting experts who unanimously agreed that the first portion, the bulk of the letter in which Kurt seemed to be addressing his fans and discussing why he's choosing to quit Nirvana and the music industry, is written in Kurt's own handwriting. The bottom portion, the only part of the note that alludes to suicide, is written differently and has the look of someone trying to copy Kurt's handwriting style. So this other note that Rosemary found was like Courtney practicing handwriting. Okay, the accomplice, a local Seattle musician who went by the stage name El Duce, came forward after Kurt's death and claimed that Courtney Love offered him $50,000 to murder Kurt and stage it as a suicide. He turned her down at the time, thinking she wasn't serious, but after Kurt's death, he came forward and spoke about it. He even passed polygraph tests attesting to this. In 1996, he died in a mysterious circumstance, allegedly passing out on a railroad track and was run over by a train. Another local Seattle musician, who goes by the name Alan Wrench, is believed to be the hitman that Courtney Love wound up hiring. He is known in that scene as a very temperamental, violent person, and had extensive training in martial arts and handling guns. Shortly after Kurt died, he suddenly began living far above his means, buying two new cars and putting a down payment on a house for himself. Now, the private investigator, Tom Grant. The private investigator that Courtney Love hired to locate Kurt days before his body was found believed that the entire situation was very suspicious. He felt that Courtney's behavior was odd and that she knew much more than she was letting on. He felt so strongly about it, he conducted his own investigation using his own money and resources long after Courtney stopped paying him for his services. Grant is an ex-police officer with decades of experience in homicide investigation, so he strongly believes that Kurt Cobain's suicide was staged, that to this day he continues to fight for the case to be reopened and investigated. And just so you know, if you look into this Tom Grant guy, like, there's nothing fishy in his background. He seems pretty respected in his field, so he seems legit and trustworthy. This is an interesting little side case, I guess you could say. The bassist in Courtney's band Hole, her name was Kristen, and supposedly it is rumored that Kristen Pfaff was in love with Kurt, and they wanted desperately to get away from Courtney and to get away from the Seattle music and drug scene, and so they wanted to run away. After Kurt's death, Pfaff was devastated. She quit Hole, moved back to her hometown in Minnesota. She got sobered up and was recuperating. Several months later, she returned to Seattle for a couple of days to pick up the last of her belongings and say goodbye to some friends. But she never left. On the day of her scheduled departure, She was found in her motel bathroom, overdosed on heroin, and with narcotic paraphernalia scattered all over the room. Prior to Kurt's death, Courtney had noticed her interest in him and publicly threatened her in front of numerous people on numerous occasions. It was rumored that it was Kristen that Kurt was sided with in the days leading up to his death. Also, interesting little piece of information, the coroner who performed Kristen's autopsy apparently was the same one who did Kurt Cobain's autopsy and happens to be a friend of Courtney Love. So, here's another twist, another thing to consider. The fact that there was only one photo of the body and so much questionable evidence, not to mention the media was not allowed to attend the funeral. This leads some people to believe that he faked his death because he was sick of being famous. One fan posted online to look at Kurt, Courtney, and Francis's name. The words, "Kurt is alive," can be taken from their names. Yes, because somebody must have jumped into a time machine, gone back to the moment those names were being given, and instructed to name them accordingly to be able to derive those words to become all a part of the plan to fake his death. That makes sense, right? And then there is, of course, the sighting in Europe. Did you see the picture? I saw it. No, it's not him. It's stupid. It's some guy who's wearing like the same glasses and kind of clothes and hair. So if you want to look like Kurt Cobain, that's what you do. If you're Kurt Cobain and you don't want to look like Kurt Cobain and you're trying to hide, you don't dress like yourself like you were in the 90s. Right? That's stupid. And there is another theory. There is a lady who says that she visits another planet and she sees him there. They let him visit home from time to time. He's looking kind of pale, but you'd expect that from being stuck on an alien spacecraft. And apparently, Elvis is there too. And him and Kurt, they jam out together once in a while. Pretty cool, right? So there you go. There are your options. There's some facts for you. Do your own research if any of those things make you question or you want to know more about it. I tried to be as thorough as I possibly could to give you all the information. Suicide, homicide, or still alive, living on another planet, jamming out with Elvis. You decide. My conclusion is that Kurt Cobain committed suicide. I know not all of you agree, but that's okay. Having an open mind is a good thing. Being open to listen to all the theories, then making up your own mind is what you should do. Don't try to fit something where it doesn't fit, though. I think people tend to do that to get the results or the answer that they want. You have it in your head that it's one way. So everything that you hear, you make it fit that narrative. And that can go both ways, whether you believe it's homicide or suicide. You listen to all of this and you can make any of that information fit what you want to and find a reason that it does or does not fit. So the truth is, though, the man was depressed. He had a family history of suicide. He was having severe pain with his stomach that was actually getting worse. He was in physical and mental pain. He was dealing with demons, and he just couldn't deal with the pain anymore. That's what I believe. I think he was a good person and had some shitty things that stacked against his odds in childhood, and he still overcame so much and became huge and was a voice of a generation and an amazing talent. And I think he had so much empathy and cared for the world and hated to see the pain that was in the world, and he was in his own pain. So I don't know if you agree with me that he did commit suicide, but that is what I 100% believe. The man was depressed, he was in pain, and he wanted to end his pain. So, there you have it. The story of Kurt Cobain. Thank you for listening. I don't know when I'm going to be hopping back on with my next episode. You guys are just going to have to be patient with me. Maybe I'll get back into the weekly routine soon. But anyways, have a great week or next couple of weeks or whenever I talk to you again. And until then, stay dark. Bye.